We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Because you're listening to this podcast, we at Blue Wire want you to know this. One, we freaking love you. And two, we want to learn more about you. Help us make more content you'll love by filling out a survey you can find in the description of this podcast. You'll help us out a ton, and you'll have a chance to win a Blue Wire t-shirt, hoodie, or a pair of AirPods. We appreciate you, hope you're staying safe, and want you to enjoy this podcast.
Welcome to episode 200 of the Barcelona Podcast, home to the most influential voices in the FC Barcelona community, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network and sponsor betonline.ag. Hit that subscription button to be first to listen to the hottest takes on the biggest stories coming out of the Camp Nou. I'm Dan Hilton, and I am again joined by Frances Tomàs, Barca columnist featured on ESPN, Barca Blog, and many others. Frances, not used to talking to you twice a week, but we were just too excited to get to episode 200, or actually, Barca won yesterday. And it's Messi's birthday today. So we have to take in all that positivity before we remember that Barca may not be champions and Messi is 33 years old.
Hola, culés. I was fairly happy when you started recording, but you put a downer on that at the end. But I'm not going to let you do that. I am super excited to be recording 200 episodes today. We have had people listening to us from the very beginning, and I've got no idea how they're still here.
Well, on today's show, we will be recapping Barca against Athletic Club. Yesterday, we're going to be discussing the rumor about Artur leaving that just keeps on heating up. And maybe we're going to be talking a little bit about hitting 200. So first things first, though, Frances, talking about yesterday, Barcelona's 1-0 win over Athletic. Big names in the YouTube review I had last night. Riqui Puig, Ansu Fati. Okay, even Rakitic had a goal, but it's a youth revolution at the Camp Nou.
Well, yeah. It's a new revolution as much as Quique Setién allows it to be. I think that he's got players that can change games. I think that the game against Bilbao, not because we won it, because really we could have drawn or even lost that. It came out to Ivan Rakitic, who pretty much flopped in the previous game. I know we debated that in the previous episode. I strongly recommend our listeners go back and listen to it if they haven't. But no, absolutely. I think Setién now has no choice but to play the youngsters. Having a game every 72 hours shows that fitness and freshness and hunger is a quality that not everyone in the dressing room does have at this moment in time. And I do expect changes from the very beginning.
Yeah, I feel like all I needed for Fati and Puig was almost to have the numbers back things up. Again, I've been a huge advocate for Riqui Puig, and I wanted him to get time because I felt like obviously, he was going to be a big role for me, at least in the future of the club down the road. But even though his defensive positioning isn't always perfect, what he provides offensively, we now have, because he got a more of an extended run out, playing about 25, 35. Well, he played 35 minutes, Fati gets 25. But in that 35 minutes, the numbers are there that Barca were just better when he was on the field. Expected goals, which is an important stat and gets more important, it seems like, year after year. The expected goals for Barca in the 65 minutes before Ansu Fati and Puig were on the pitch, 0.30. Expected goals for Barca in the 25 minutes when Ansu Fati and Puig were on the pitch together, 1.59. What they simply added was that when Puig became the fulcrum in the middle of that attack, Barca started moving the ball, and that allowed them to widen the pitch a bit and stretch out that 5-3-2 of Athletic Club when they were defending. And Ansu Fati, because of his willingness to continue to go at defenders, stretched the pitch out, which was so important to just getting Messi the space required. And it was just so cool to see. And I say cool as in almost the wrong adjective there, but it was cool to see that Messi had the space. Even I noticed in the last 10 minutes of the match, there was a moment when Messi was completely isolated out on the right wing, and he checks to the ball, fakes out the defender, and gets a wide open sprint down the right wing on a ball that Nelson Semedo was able to get to him. It didn't lead to anything after that, but I was wondering when that happened. I went, how is Messi in a one-on-one situation alone on the right wing in the last 10 minutes of a match? And that was because just a few minutes earlier to that, Ansu Fati took on two defenders on the left wing. They had to bring that help and slide an extra one of those back five over to Ansu Fati because he just kept going at them. And you do have to respect the speed and willingness he has to go directly at defenders. And then again, the other part of that was Ricky Puig, just moving the ball quicker. As silly as that was, moving the ball quicker. And even the goal, credit on Rakitic for being there, continuing his run. But the reason Rakitic continued that run in the box was because Puig started that whole sequence with a direct ball straight up the middle to Vidal. And then Rakitic, a few moments later, when Messi was in the box and that ball was just bouncing around, that direct ball in was able to kind of get the defense on its back heels. So when Barca continued to try to take chances in, Vidal had a little chance there, the ball finally gets to Messi and he finds Rakitic. But Rakitic, because Puig had already supported that run, was able to make the run in that he could just continued on, that he should always be doing into the box. And Rakitic usually doesn't do that. So all of those things happened because those two young players came on, and we can actually see that Barca were unequivocally better because the two of them were playing.
For me, it's very clear. There was a very, very clear example when Ricky Puig didn't respect the hierarchy that obviously has been instilled in the dressing room for so many years, and it's what stops us from moving on. Messi walked towards a corner kick. Ricky Puig was going to take it. Messi walked towards it, and you know, 99 times out of 100, if that's anybody else taking the corner, they just give the ball to Messi and they start doing little 1-2s from the side. Ricky Puig just took the corner all the way to the goalkeeper or towards the goalkeeper. And that was a bit of a change. I know it's minor, I know it's little, but it is very telling that these youngsters, both Fati and Ricky Puig, they certainly don't respect those hierarchies and they're here to make an impact. As you mentioned, Ricky changed the game immediately. He wasn't messing around. He wasn't best passing the ball horizontally. He wasn't controlling and awaiting and being cautious. He was just going for it. And, you know, that in the past has been used as a detriment to him. But he was also very aggressive when recovering balls. And I think in the next match, considering that De Jong is injured and Sergio Roberto, if he's fit, he's probably going to go to the right back position, I think Ricky Puig is now a starter, or should be. He changed the rhythm of the game. He was not always running desperately forward. He's shown that composure. And I think that, you know, he deserves a spot in the starting 11, as I wrote down in my article in Barca Blog before the game even started. And the other one that we've talked about is Ansu Fati. He was much, much, much more influential than Griezmann. And I don't think anyone here argues that he was much more purposeful than even Braithwaite would have been or when he came in. He does deserve to start as well. I don't think it's even really a debate anymore. When we've got matches coming so short after one another, I think both youngsters have to start. And it's not just, you know, let's trust La Masia because, you know, they're one of our own, etc., which obviously does play a part as well. It's just, given the players we've got at our disposal right now, they should be in the first 11. It's as simple as that.
Right, and I don't think there's a big, big change, right? I don't want this one individual game to create all these narratives, but the narrative from this game that should be taken was that Barca needed something. They do need some energy, and that is the whole point that, you know, again, I always credit Kevin Williams because he's been trumpeting this for now going on about 2.5 seasons, that Barca's legs are just too old. And that's not a bad thing because that also means experience and it means that they understand where to be defensively and they just have a rock solid defense. I want to credit this real quick. Ter Stegen has kept 5 league clean sheets and for the first time in his career, in a row rather. And then Barcelona have kept 5 La Liga clean sheets in a row for the first time since 2015-16. So the defense is solid right now. And where I want to give credit to Quique Setién is that he has found ways to put this veteran team who should be getting caught out on the counter time and time again because they're just not that fast. But Gerard Piqué was awesome in that game yesterday, and we haven't heard anything about the injury so far, that the groin that seemed to be acting up late, but hopefully he's healthy because he was awesome yesterday. And then Sergio Busquets, especially in that first half, I thought he was the best player on the field. Not too many compliments to give out for the first 45 minutes, but I thought Busquets was really terrific just in his positioning, and not even offensively, but just defensively. He had that goal-saving tackle in that first half as well out on the counter. So Busquets was awesome, and the Barcelona defense has been really great. And that is a credit to Quique Setién for molding the team to not get beat with the counters. However, you're seeing offensively that if you have a team, and as much as you want to say about Griezmann, my problem was with Luis Suarez yesterday, where, and this is the man management where you can critique Quique Setién on, he played 90 minutes, that being Luis Suarez, a few days before. Why is he again playing 90 minutes in this one? It just doesn't make sense for man management. And it was frustrating to me. And again, this is just personality. If you're going to be a top professional footballer, you've got to have an edge, especially if you're a striker. You kind of have got to be an ornery guy. You might not be looking like you might be so liked, but I said this in the YouTube video as well. He seems to me like when I play pickup basketball, which unfortunately I haven't been able to do with COVID, but when I play pickup basketball, there always seems to be an older guy there who sometimes is a dad, and it's fine that he's there because that guy could ball back in the day and he's a great player then, and he's still got a lot of the same tools now. But because he can't really get up and down the court so much, he just likes to shoot a three every time you give him the ball, or he'll constantly yell ball, 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 and then drive into traffic when everybody's around him. And that's how I felt with Luis Suarez yesterday. He looked like he was injured in the first 10 minutes of the match. And just going on that, as much space as he does create, if he's not hitting a banger in, if he's not really just crushing the ball, putting his laces through it, and scoring this miraculous goal out of nothing, then you kind of question why he's still just trotting out there and yelling at his teammates. There was a moment, I think, in the first 35 minutes of the match where Artur wasn't able to get the ball back to him, and Luis Suarez yelled at Artur, and Artur yelled back, "Well, you have to check to the ball." And he was right. That was the argument. It was that you can't yell at me for not finding you if you're not going to check back to the ball when you have the man in front of you. And that was the argument, that it's almost an impossible angle to play. Yeah, so I was really frustrated with Suarez, but we also understand why he's playing 90 minutes, because he's been deemed fit and he says, "I'm playing," and Messi probably has given him the backing, and that's why that's happening. So as much as you want to get upset about Griezmann, I think Luis Suarez was the thing that really worried me and frustrated me yesterday.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's very, very, very clear, because, you know, Setién said it in the press conference before Sevilla that Luis Suarez is not fully fit. But then when you know that and you announce that to the media, they're playing him for 175 minutes straight. It just doesn't make any sense. We do know that the best Luis Suarez must be aggressive. And when he is aggressive, it's because he's got 100% of his capabilities there. And he just doesn't have that. He's obviously tired. I do understand that Setién respects the hierarchies of the dressing room. I don't abide by it. I don't buy it. I don't want it, but that's what Quique Setién is trying to do. And I just think it's very obvious he should be rested. I mean, with these key players, and I do include Suarez, but obviously Busquets, Piqué, Alba, etc., we need to be grateful for what they have done in the past, but we need to hold them accountable for what they're doing today. And what they're doing today, especially in Suarez's case, is just not good enough.
Right. It's not all of them, right? And that's what we've been saying. Since the break came back, it's not just Jordi Alba's age. Jordi Alba has been awesome and has deserved to play a full 90 and has put Junior Firpo on the bench because of his performances. Gerard Piqué the same way. You can worry about getting Araujo some time, but Piqué has deserved to play the full 90. He's been awesome since his comeback. Busquets has been the same way. I think he's, under Quique Setién, the guy who we've seen night and day from the Valverde time. But there are guys like Rakitic who had a struggling game midweek, or rather over the weekend against Sevilla. And then you have Arturo Vidal, who just really hasn't been good enough in the last two games. And then Suarez, who was much better against Sevilla, I thought even. He was fine. But then you look at what he did against Athletic Club, and there were problems. And Messi, as much as he didn't have a Messi day yesterday, and he seemed to be just a little bit off, it's incredible to me, because then you actually see the stats after the game. This is the 10th La Liga game this season in which Messi completed more dribbles than the entire opposition. 10 dribbles completed successful for Messi to just 6 from Athletic Club. So as much as you might think that Messi didn't have a great day, he just continues to just do things that an opponent doesn't do. In that first half was Barca's only option. And I think when you say that Fati and Puig aren't okay with the hierarchy, I think they're just playing the way that you're taught to play in the academy, that no one player is greater than the others. And to help a great player, you have to put them in positions to succeed. And again, that's where we go all the way back to what the positivity was from this match. I think that the word I kept seeing was naivety. And I don't think it's naivety from fans to say that Puig and Fati were willing and fearless to move the ball in the proper ways, in the way that Barca should be playing, right? That we got to see it for 35 minutes, that they were playing the quote-unquote Barca way. And what that does, it alleviates pressure from Messi. It puts him in spaces to succeed. It gives him opportunities to have less pressure and less than five defenders constantly around him every time he touches the ball. Because the other big point was, again, in the YouTube video, I called this out, that there were moments when this is also a disservice to Griezmann. Barca front three, in particular Messi, Suarez, and Griezmann, were all in a space of about 15 to 20 yards of each other. And that's fine if you have those small passes and you can open things up out wide, but there was no one then out wide. Alba hadn't made the run forward yet. There was nobody out wide to dink a 1-2 and then switch the ball to, right? You'd see so many times with Messi and Xavi going all the way back there where they would get almost right on top of each other, try to shake hands, but really they were just doing a 1-2 pass to allow the other one to switch the field. But there was no player to switch the field to. Even Semedo had this counterattack in the first half where he winds up cutting in. Unfortunately, Griezmann, Suarez, and Messi were all also in the middle of the field and kind of converging on this space. And then the counterattack just completely breaks down. Barca passes around the penalty box for, you know, about 15, 20 passes. And then eventually, Athletic Club is either to cut something out or they make Messi turn the ball over. And that happened time and time again. And then the youngsters come on and things change. Frances, before you do respond to that, I just want to hit the ad break real quick. There is no shortage of action going on at our exclusive partners, betonline.ag. Sports are slowly making their way back, and BetOnline is leading the way with the best odds and lines for all UFC, NASCAR, boxing, and soccer matches. And if you need even more, they have simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC simulations all day, every day, live on their website. Looking for something else other than sports? BetOnline has hundreds of casino games, poker tournaments, and prop bets to check out. Visit betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE for a free welcome bonus. That's one word, BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. So, Frances, we look forward, and against Sevilla, it seemed like Barca just weren't good enough. Do you feel like there could still be a title race if personnel was chosen properly?
I would say the title is still on, yes. But I think it's more likely that Barca don't win all their games and points than there is of Madrid not doing so. In other words, I think Barca are their own worst enemy at this moment in time, because I don't think they quite know what they're playing at. I think Quique Setién was brought in order to change, to make an improvement into what Valverde had been doing until that point. We cannot forget that the players were fairly happy to have Valverde and coast along with his mechanisms, his formations, etc. The board thought differently, and so did the vast majority of the fan base, to be honest. But, you know, what Setién has brought has been quite disappointing to date. I'm not saying that it won't change. I'm not saying that it won't get better. But until now, Barca don't really know what sort of game are they playing. I mean, is Barca an addition of great individuals, or is Barca a collective in which the collective is more important? The change needed hasn't come. The ball is flowing too slowly. The purpose is still lacking. We're not quite able to work out, in this case, the midfield. Messi is the only one that can do this, and obviously Riqui Puig when he comes on. But the rest of the players don't seem to be able to read when these final pass can go through. They keep losing their positions, especially in attack. In defense, as you said, is quite solid, so that's not bad. But in attacking, especially overlapping, etc., the positions have been occupied. I think the width of the pitch is decent. I think it has been better. Both Alba's been all right. It wasn't that great in the last game. But Semedo and Roberto in the first game after the COVID break was actually quite good as well. But I don't think they're going deep enough. And Barca, without very deep runs and the overlap from the wings, are just not as effective as they should be. The subs seem to be pre-planned all the time. It looks like, you know, Setién just comes up with a sheet of paper 2-3 hours before the game. And then whatever happens in the game, he sticks with that. that's not what I remember him doing at Betis, to be honest. And that's not why myself and so many other Barca fans around the world wanted Setién to come and change things. He's not able to react. And I do think that, as we have been mentioned, a shakeup is needed. And otherwise, the team will continue to struggle against opponents that just have two, three, four players at the heart of defense and, in a way, pile up on Messi whenever he's got the ball. There needs to be more flow. There needs to be more variety. And I just don't think we will win La Liga playing like this. Not because of the refereeing conspiracy that Piqué referred to, which, you know, may play a factor as well. Not because of Real Madrid winning the matches, but just because I don't think we will. But having said all that, the last five, six, 7 minutes in the last game against Bilbao were better. That's what we need to see on a consistent basis in order to have a chance of lifting the title again.
Yeah, I like what you said about the width. And I just want to be very clear tactically that he's having the fullbacks, that being Semedo and Alba, largely stay at home. We're actually seeing Alba stay at home a bit more than he's used to. Now, he was able to get forward as the match went on against Athletic Club as it opened up just a little bit. But yeah, if Alba and Semedo are going to stay at home, because again, it all goes back to the same ideas that Barca are an aging squad. And so their midfielders, if they're all over the age of 30, as it was against Sevilla with Vidal, Rakitic, and Busquets starting, if you have an older midfield like that that just doesn't have the makeup, the ground speed that they used to against a counterattack, you've got to keep your fullbacks deeper and not allow them to really get deep and get completely to the opposing goal line. And so that means that your wingers, that being in this one, started Griezmann, and we know that Messi, especially if he's dropping deep to receive the ball, is not going to be stretching out on the right wing. So it puts more responsibility on Semedo. But and it seems like there's a lot of if-then statements, because if Messi is going to be in the middle of the field, that means that in theory, Semedo should be the one making that run all the way to the opposing goal line to stretch out the field. But he has to stay at home because the midfield and the center backs, that being Gerard Piqué at least, are much older. So you can't take Semedo away from trying to cut out the counterattack. He's one of the quickest 2-3 guys on the entire field, for at least for Barca. And so you can't take him away from his defensive duties to put him up there to stretch the field on the right wing. And then on the other side, if Alba's going to stay home, you need Antoine Griezmann to be stretching on the left side. But he's not really doing that because he's a player that doesn't really fit in that, you know, 1v1 winger on the side. He has to come in, check to the ball, and try to combine in the middle of the field as basically a secondary striker in a 4-3-3, which is a position that doesn't exist. So you see how one problem that you try to solve, you can't really solve that one problem without bringing up something else. Now, fortunately, Frankie de Jong and his ability to move the ball is a little helpful in stretching a team out, but you see how sorely lacking the team is without him on the field, in the midfield at least. And then another one of those midfielders, and this is a great transition to this, Arthur, for all that people were excited about and have said that he keeps possession so well since he showed up at Barca, I don't really have too many compliments to add to that. And you have to wonder that even yesterday, if he had some rumors and he may have had some diarios in the back of his head.
Well, I know I'm not in the majority here. I can sense it by reading the comments in the Barcelona podcast private group on Facebook. As people know, I'm not on Twitter or on Instagram or anything like that, because, you know, it's just too much trolling and pressure and nonsense going on in there. But honestly, 80 million euros for Arthur, I would take it. I would put him in the box myself, and I would do the lace and deliver it to Italy myself. I will even pedal it all the way through. 80 million euros for a player that in 3 years has either been injured or recovering from injury or adapting to the football game again in terms of pace, etc., because he wasn't fully fit and then gets injured again. 80 million euros. I mean, what are we talking about here? That's a huge lot of money. That's pretty much the whole of Lautaro Martinez coming over. I think it's a no-brainer. However, there's something hidden in here, and it's the fact that the Barca board needs 70 million euros so that their accounts at the end of the year, break even. So what I'm pretty sure is happening here is that they're selling Arthur for 80 million. They're going to have the Asamblea for the year, the assembly for the year with the sources, etc. The accounts are going to be passed because they will be on a superavit, which is a plus in terms of profit. Then they're going to use, I would say, 70 million euros out of that to buy Pjanic. So basically, we've sold a 23-year-old player who I don't think is amazing yet. I think he's got skills and potential to eventually be, because that's why I'm saying that 80 million is a fair price, and I think it's a great price for Barca to sell him for. But then if the catch up for that is to get a 30-year-old player who could be good, you know, I don't think he's going to be as good as Arthur would potentially become, and get a profit of 10 million, I think that makes no sense. So there's a bit of a caveat in there, and that's why I'm not fully happy about the situation, because I think that we're going to end up with Pjanic plus 10 instead of just 80.
Exactly, right? There it is. Is that Pjanic at 30, sure, he's going to be an experienced good midfielder, but he's going to be on high wages too. It's just another Galactico, and I will say it with a negative connotation, it's just another idea of a Galactico coming in. And you're right, that 23-year-old Arthur has not, as I always say, progress is not linear. And he has stagnated, unfortunately, and it has been fitness issues. And I think that Barca's saying, well, yeah, if he's valued at 80 million, then sure. But that's the whole problem, that he's going to go for 80 million, and then you're going to use 70 million of it or so, which is an overvaluation of Pjanic. So Arthur might be overvalued, but so is basically what the guy that's going to be a swap deal. And Arthur is going to make tons more on his weekly wages, and it's going to continue to perpetrate this issue about players getting inflated weekly wages over and over again. But that'll be Juventus's problem, because Pjanic is going to ask for high wages that are basically going to offset Arthur's. So it seems like this deal is done completely between the clubs, much like Rakitic to Inter Milan. However, the player does have the final say, because he still has a contract. And the only way that would change in Spain is unless the release clause is paid, which for Arthur is quite high, and Juventus isn't interested in doing that. So this hasn't happened yet. And we could see it linger on, but it seems like the reports from the right people, and again, sources do matter, so you are getting it from the right people, though, that should be trusted, that this one seems to be very, very close to being over the finishing line. And yeah, I guess if, again, the positive is that Arthur is a player that's probably going to be sold for more than he's worth, but, you know, I don't like that idea. I think it's upsetting and frustrating that Barca were trying to build this project, and once again, we look at it over and over and over again. Once again, in the last 4 or 5 years, the player that leaves is the player that is younger, that potentially still has some room to grow, but is at the moment just not up to snuff where he can be trusted by a manager. So once again, it's the younger player. It's not Rakitic. It's not Vidal, because nobody was willing to take on their contracts and take on their wages, and the players weren't willing and agreeing to leave Barcelona quick enough. So instead of those players, once again, it's the younger player who's going to fetch you the larger amount. And it's why at the beginning of this summer, Nelson Semedo was that first name that was popping out. So I expect Nelson Semedo to stay at the club now. But all that said, I think the reason Nelson Semedo was the first name we were talking about, because he was a player that they tested the market and he still seemed to have value. And the player we didn't mention was Coutinho. Now you have Koulet's basically talking themselves back into Coutinho, because Koulet's have accepted that Coutinho is not going to be worth anything close to what he's valued at on the market, especially with the pandemic. So all things as far as the monetary way that the club is trying to recover, you know that financially they're in a bad way. And clearly you watch 90 minutes of Luis Suarez, or 180 straight minutes of Luis Suarez. Well, he didn't play 180 minutes, but you get my point. And you see him play all this time and you go, wow, a number 9 who is a little more mobile would be quite helpful. But they have their eyes only on Lautaro Martinez. Timo Werner is already at Chelsea, and the other options are going to start to weed out. And, you know, it's frustrating, because I'm not saying that this board needs to be replaced in 2021, because it might be the Bartomeu candidate that winds up getting the presidency and splitting the votes of Victor Font and Juan Laporta. So you don't know who's going to be president next summer, but it does always beg the question when you hear this kind of stuff, you go, it just seems like this is a board and people making decisions, even Eric Abidal and Quique Setién, they are making decisions for right now, for June 24th, 2020, and next week and the next 2 weeks. That is what they are making decisions for a La Liga that is going to be difficult. And I know Messi just turned 33, but they're just thinking about what is happening right now and almost disregarding the fact that of what we just saw and talked about in the first segment, that Puig and Fati, they don't necessarily just have to be the future. That Barca needs some legs. They need something. And they have Pedri and Trincao, and I almost keep forgetting about them. I can't forget about these young players that are coming in, but that doesn't mean that Arthur next year, when he's 24 years old, wouldn't be a good foundation, almost veteran piece at that point.
Yes, you mentioned all the names that I was going to mention, and I do agree. I think Busquets and De Jong will be midfield as a Barca next year. I think no one's doubting that. Rakitic, if it was up to me, he would be sold. But obviously, he's got different ideas. Not the club, because as you mentioned, they are trying to shop him out. But no, he wants to finish his contract and go to Sevilla for free, I'm sure. Artur, as I said, 80 million is great. If not, then bringing Pjanic in, I think, makes very, very little sense, next to no sense. Not because of the value, which is also, in my eyes, nonsensical. I think it's the fact that he will take playing time away from the names you mentioned. Alanya should be coming back, really, because he's got more than enough quality to at least be a squad player, challenge for a starting spot. Ricky Puig, considering what he's doing right now, and he will most probably do in the next 10 games, he's a first-team player as well. Pedri has been impressive in Las Palmas, and to be honest, Segunda División is just far too small for him. He has to come to the first team. And then Trincao, I know that he is playing as a winger in Portugal, but I think within the Barca system, he may even be slotted as an interior midfielder. Vidal is not going anywhere either. I don't think anyone's going to pay his wage. So that's a huge lot of midfielders. And if you can get 80 million for the one that basically doesn't seem to be able to pass a ball forward, then that's not a bad deal.
Right. Yeah, it does seem musical chairs that Artur is the odd man out here moving forward. If Rakitic and Vidal aren't willing to leave the club. And so it's a frustrating thing, but it's interesting to me that his performance yesterday kind of talked people in, where last week you just saw the response that nobody wanted to see Artur leave, and now he has one bad showing yesterday. I mean, I think he's been fine. Even yesterday, I thought he was fine, but now people have all turned on him.
But that's the thing. That's the thing. We cannot be that reactive as fans. I mean, everyone's got the right to say whatever, of course, and it's a free speech, whatever. But we cannot base the future of a player in one game. You know, like I was reading even the comments on the TV pod private group that we've got on Facebook. And as soon as the news of Artur going erupted, there were comments like, oh, this board, they don't know what they're doing. And, you know, this is horrendous. You log back in 8, 9, 10 hours, and it's the complete opposite. I mean, we need to have some perspective here, people. We've been doing this podcast for 3 years. For better or worse, we've seen Artur from the very first day, and we've been discussing Artur from the very first day he was in our club. He's never really got any better. And you know, just because he can't play 90 minutes properly against Athletic Bilbao, I don't think that's a decisive final straw. It needs to be a continuation of what the player has offered. And to be honest, and this is the flip of the question, would you buy Artur for 80 million euros right now? No, never, not in a million years. So if you can sell it for that money, then it's good business.
Yeah, but it goes back to the whole thing. It's a cyclical argument we're having, but you're not really, you might be getting rid of him for 80 million 1 week, but we know that there's a 95% chance that Pjanic is coming for a large amount of money. So you're really only getting rid of a 23-year-old for 10 million euros, right? Like when all is said and done, and we don't, I mean, should we truly care about the money? Or, I mean, I'm glad they're balancing the books so they don't wind up getting hit by FFP and getting another transfer ban, because I know it was Kubo's choice, but at Real Madrid or at Mallorca at the moment, we see what that transfer ban did to Barca back then. I know Suarez and Ter Stegen came that summer to make everything well, but yeah, I mean, it seems like Barca are just scrambling, and you see that they've been out in the market, that Umtiti didn't work out, that Coutinho is not fetching the right price, that Rakitic and Vidal don't want to leave, and you just see that Barca are in a box, they're in a prison of their own making, and that is unfortunate to see for the club that we love. But I hope that there are people at the club that continue to be saying the right things, and I do hope that the scouting that they've done, whether it's Pedri or Trincao and some of the younger players, that the eye for talent is still there. Barca, as much as they also they got rid of so much of their scouting department a few weeks ago as well, that they said wasn't COVID related, but they got rid of so much of their scouting department, so now there's even less eyes to catch talent. But the only talent that Barca continues to really rely on and see is now 33 years old. So this is kind of what the last segment will wrap up the show with. I don't know if there's much else to say. 33 years old, Messi is today. He was 29 when we started this show, Frances, and it seems like everyone's on the same page here. You have to savor every hour, every minute he is on the field. He's just the most special player that we've ever seen. And I even said to my wife yesterday, it's incredible to me that I was born within 4 years of the, or three, well, rather 3 years. I was born within 3 years of the greatest player ever to lace up a pair of boots. And that is pretty special. And I've been very lucky to see him in the way that I have.
Of course, and also the fact that he's played all of his career for Barca. We can actually witness history being made. I don't really know what else to say about Messi. I mean, everything that you could possibly say has been said. He's the best player to ever play the game. I know there's debates with Maradona, Pelé, etc. But to be honest, they didn't win in terms of club football even a tenth of what Messi is achieving. And they didn't play with the consistency that Messi has been doing week in, week out for 16 years now. I think anyone who's basically played against him understands that the caliber of a player that he is. Everyone who's played with it, they, whenever they talk to anybody else, they would be saying, "Yep, I played with Messi when I was active, when I was an active footballer." And yeah, he's just fantastic. And to see the amount of willingness, the amount of energy that he brings to every single game, despite the fact that the people around him and the managers around him haven't necessarily, in my eyes, been as effective as he deserves to make him win. Because, you know, let's not forget, he hasn't won a Champions League for nearly 5 years now. I think that's a detriment to his legacy. And that's why I keep saying we need to win and we need to win now. And, you know, I do worry about the future, but I think that until Messi's time is over, you need to do everything within your power to bring the best players around him and to give him the best managers and et cetera, in order to make him succeed in the collective even more. But obviously what he's won already is legendary.
Right. And that's at the heart of the problem too, that they've tried to do their best to bring the best players to put around him and available around him. But that also means that you had to pay those players what they thought they were worth in terms of weekly wages and the transfer fees. And so to try to bring the best players in around him, the club has, again, kind of put themselves in a position where if those guys haven't lived up, they've had a hard time moving them on for reasonable prices. And now they're, again, they're in a problem of their own making as Messi continues to age. So things look bleak, but also remember where we started this show, that Barca still have Messi and he still looks like the best player in the world at 33. He's, I would say, already continuing to be the favorite for the Ballon d'Or. Now, we know that if Barca don't win the Champions League, they don't win the Liga, the individual titles will not come for Messi because he is the best player in the world every year. And the committees and all the voting and the politics, just they need Messi to not get the team trophy so that he winds up not getting the individual award either. And we know that's how that works. But yeah, he's 33, still the best player in the world. So for Barca to just add some legs, add some energy, and add some help to him would be great. And I think that's a perfect transition, Frances, to the final thing that we're going to talk about, is that we have hit 200, and I would have not, and you would have not gotten to 200 without some major help as well.
Of course. I mean, we started this project, the Barcelona podcast project, when podcasting really wasn't known in Europe at all. You just basically call me one day, or I called you or something, and we just said, right, let's just start doing this because we just want to talk. I have been blogging and writing about Barca at ESPN, Barca blog, etc. for around 7 or 8 years already. But I was getting tired of just writing all the time because I had much more to say and I didn't have a space to say it. And then obviously pairing up with you, with your expertise, not just in Barca, but also producing and editing, etc. It was, you know, I don't want to get too emotional here, but a match made in heaven. Apparently that's what our listeners think as well. So yeah, it's just been a great experience talking to you over 3 years. There was a year in the middle that when I moved to Qatar that I just couldn't make it, and you kept it going, especially with the help of some fantastic Barca lovers around the world. And if we hit 200, it's not just thanks to me, certainly not. It's thanks to you as the main driver of the podcast and obviously all the people that listen to us on a weekly basis, but all of those that came and spoke, especially during that period, and keep coming up as guests when we can.
Yeah, I agree. I think when you talk about just you and I working together, again, not getting too sappy or anything, but people know that, and I think you can hear this, that we are just different personalities, that I may go on my rare rants, but one of us is a go-getter that's willing to take risks and try things, and the other one is kind of just, you know, we'll say the worker bee that does his homework and make sure that he's dotted his I's and crossed his T's, and that's just the two personalities that wind up working together. So I do want to thank you and your family for all the time support, as well as my wife for putting up with so much all the time. I always kick her out, as I did this morning at 9 a.m. here on the East Coast in the U.S., kicking her out of our home office every week to record, having her set up and film the YouTube videos with me, every question about a JPEG, every idea for the show, every time that I get frustrated by Rakitic or Luis Suarez and I can't bring that nothingness to the podcast. She has to hear those rants, and just a commitment to spend so many hours doing something I love doing with the patience that my wife has, that hoping that it'll continue to pay off in the future. Again, her support is, I think, paramount to this continuing. And also on BarcaBlog.com today, along with this episode, we are releasing our Hall of Fame with every guest we've ever had. So you can go down memory lane there. We have the current and former players we've had on, including Ronald DeBoer, as well as John Picaro from the other day, Natasha Andonova in the past. We had formerly of the Barcelona Feminine. We've had so many journalists, authors, fellow podcasters, the Peñas. And I also want to mention by name our Barcelona podcast all-stars that, as you mentioned, kept this show going in 2018 when you were away. A special thank you most of all to those who made four appearances or more. And that crew is Alex Truica, Barcelev, Diana Christine, Eugenia Carolí, Kevin Williams, Mike Miller, and Navid Molagai. So those are the Barcelona all-stars that have been on four or more times in these 3+ years, and they're the ones that really did help me get through in 2018 and helped us get to 200. Even in the early going, they were willing to come on, give of their time, and seem to care about it for no money, and just for out of the kindness of their heart and their love of FC Barcelona. So that is what this show is always about. We're not going to waste any more of your time, because your time is precious, and with matches every 3 days, I know people have limited time to digest before the next match is going on. So a big thank you to all of them, and a big thank you to you for tuning in again. You can tap in your app and check out the show notes to subscribe. You can find us on social media. We're on Twitter at The Barcelona Pod, or at HiltonD13 for me, and on Instagram at The Barcelona Pod. That closed Facebook group is tbpod.link/group for deeper dives and discussions. And you can also help us out on Patreon to continue making these shows at tbpod.link/Patreon. We're also on YouTube at The Barcelona Podcast. Check us out, match reviews, all that stuff and more. Hit that subscription button as well. Like those videos. That helps out a lot. So thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon, and Forza Barça.
200. Forza.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.